Welcome to this week's Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Beale and Emma Adjumang, Deputy Personal Finance Editor and Personal Finance Writer at Investors Chronicle, and Alex Brandreth, Deputy Chief Investment Officer and Senior Fund Manager at Brown Shipley. Inflation has risen rapidly this year, with Consumer Price Index, or CPI inflation, hitting 3%, the highest level in 5 years. And this isn't good news for savers and investors, as inflation can erode the value of certain assets over time, reducing their purchasing power. Emma, you've been looking at this. Which assets are particularly vulnerable to inflation?
Well, the one most in line of fire is cash. As you mentioned, inflation erodes the purchasing power of how much cash can buy. So, for example, if inflation is running at 3% for the next 10 years, then £100, which is worth today, will be worth the equivalent of £74 in 10 years' time.
Okay, so does that mean you shouldn't have any of your assets in cash?
No, it doesn't. In fact, everybody should be holding some form of cash in case of emergencies, like losing your job, for example. And the general rule of thumb is that you should have between 3 to 6 months of your monthly outgoings in cash.
Okay, so you're saying you should have, let's say, a certain amount in cash, but not everything. The thing is, I mean, if you're a cautious investor and don't like volatility, or not unreasonably take the view that markets are high at the moment and it's not a good time to invest, well, what do you do?
Well, I mean, it's totally understandable that some investors are more cautious or are worried about high valuations and maybe feel a bit reluctant to invest because of that. But you really need to realise that there is a risk to holding cash. So it's not risk-free. Inflation is going to be eaten into the value of your cash holdings. And so one way in which you can try and get over your worry about markets being expensive, for example, is to drip feed money into the market. So by investing small regular amounts, pound cost averaging will mean that some months the value of your investment will buy more when markets are cheaper, and some months when they're more expensive, they'll buy less. So that's one way of doing it.
Okay, that's a really good tactic, actually. Now, we've always been talking about cash as one problem area. What other types of assets are vulnerable to inflation?
The other big one is fixed income, like government bonds. And that's because fixed income, as the name suggests, pays out fixed levels of interest and the capital payment on maturity. And that's regardless of whether inflation is rising or falling, which means that if inflation is rising, then the real value of the return you get back from the bond is worth less due to inflation.
Does this mean you should avoid bonds?
I think it certainly means you should think carefully about how much you have in this area in an inflationary environment. Because avoid bonds can be, you know, used traditionally for diversification. If interest rates or inflation rise higher than expected, you could see bond prices fall, and that might lead to capital loss.
Okay, so if you are going to have some bonds, what funds could you consider for getting exposure?
A good fund would be one that focuses on investing in short duration bonds, as they have less exposure to interest rate risk. And one example is GAM Star Credit Opportunities.
Okay, now we've been focusing on the assets that inflation isn't good for. So let's now turn to the assets you could perhaps invest in that might be more resilient to inflation. What could you consider?
Equities are a good way. They're often a powerful way of hedging against inflation. And that's because good companies generally have the ability to increase profits at least in line with inflation and hopefully above inflation.
Okay, so you're talking about good companies. Can you elaborate a bit? You know, what kind of equities are good against inflation?
Well, kind of companies that you might want to invest in are those that can grow their profits and dividends even in the face of inflation. And that means they'll often have strong pricing power, which means that even when inflation is rising and their cost prices are rising, they can actually pass that on to their customers. Nevertheless, people will still keep buying their products and services, perhaps because they have strong brands or unique products. So companies with strong pricing power are one good example.
Okay, that sounds like a really good place to be. Now, well, how can you get access to them? Which funds should you buy to get exposure to these companies?
There's a few funds out there, but one example is Lion Trust Special Situations Fund, which is run by Anthony Cross and Julian Foch. And they specialise in investing in companies with strong pricing power, strong brands.
Okay, no, so that's a UK equities fund with a growth mandate. Are there any other types of funds that might be quite good for outpacing inflation?
You could also turn to UK or global equity income funds, and they're good because the value of the yield that you get on the funds can be helpful if you're trying to beat inflation. I mean, if the fund is yielding more than inflation, you're already outpacing inflation by holding the fund in that way.
Okay, that's a useful suggestion, and do check out our list of IC Top 100 funds for some suggestions on UK and overseas equity income funds. Alex, what's your view on inflation? Do you think that the recent increase is a concern? And even more importantly, is it going to go up further?
So on the first question, is it a concern? It is starting to be a bit of a concern because inflation is greater than wage inflation at the moment. So as a nation, we're all starting to feel slightly poorer. And I think that's starting to come through in some of the consumption numbers that you're seeing as well. So there was the data point yesterday that was released, which was the CBI, which fell significantly, which shows that consumption is actually starting to fall in the UK, which is a slightly worrying sign because consumption is a significant part of the UK economy, and it's about 70% or so. So it could mean that growth in this quarter could be lower than expected.
Mm.
And sorry, the second part was, do you think it will rise further? I don't think so. I think the Bank of England have also come out and said that this is going to be the peak month, because if you're looking at why inflation is higher, it's the impact that sterling's had since the referendum. And that's nearly, well, it is over a year or so ago now, so it should start to drop out the numbers. So we're expecting inflation to start to fall over the next 6 months or so.
Okay, so not all bad news. Nevertheless, it's not low. Emma was talking about assets that she thought particularly vulnerable. What do you think is particularly vulnerable at current levels of inflation?
I think she touched on exactly the right type of assets, being cash and fixed income as being predominant areas where inflation will be a concern, because inflation will be higher than the current coupon that you're getting on either cash or fixed income assets. So I think that's absolutely right to be more cautious about those assets at the moment.
Okay, is there anything else that you should be concerned about?
Other assets that might be priced off that. So infrastructure type projects are also priced off fixed income maturities as well. So that would be another concern potentially, although the yields on offer are higher than inflation. So it's kind of offset to a certain extent. So I think cash and fixed income are the main ones really.
Yeah. Now, Emma didn't suggest totally avoiding them. What's your line? Do you think you should give cash and bonds a wide berth?
It depends on the client risk profile and whether they have attitude to risk, so if they're willing to take more risk or not. If you're willing to take more risk, then naturally there'll be smaller parts of your portfolio anyway. But for a more cautious investor, I wouldn't say avoid them totally, because they do present an offset to portfolios. If stock markets were to fall, government bonds tend to do well in that environment, so it does present some balance to your portfolio. And as we mentioned, cash can be used to drip into markets during times of weakness as well, so you can use that as an entry point, and it can dampen volatility of the portfolio as well.
Okay, now turning to things that might mitigate inflation, Emma mentioned equities. What would you suggest?
Well, you want real assets, so you want assets that are going to grow with inflation as inflation picks up. So equities are an example of real assets, as are property and commodities and things like that, things that you can actually physically touch. I suppose it's also what's important is the type of inflation that you have, because if you have, this is a one-off inflationary shock, whereas if you have longer-term sustained inflation, that's where you'd want to have more real assets. So I think with inflation falling back down to lower levels over the next few months, then I don't think that we need to be thinking about as much real assets in your portfolio. But it's nice to have equities that can have sustainable dividends and can grow those dividends as well over time.
Okay. Now, are there any risks or disadvantages to these types of assets?
Well, particularly equities, they're clearly high risk equities. So if markets were to come under pressure or there any risk, then could suffer some capital loss. I suppose on the other side as well, if you wanted to mitigate, you could buy some index linked bonds, which we haven't touched on yet, because that would be protecting your purchasing power in the future. But bonds are quite expensive as well, because of, as we'll get to later, quantitative easing and other measures that central banks have done as well.
Yeah. To get exposed to these assets, have any funds that you use of clients? Or
so on the index link perspective, there's a few government bond funds, there's one or two corporate bond funds that you can get exposure to as well. In equities, I'd be looking at an equity income type fund, which is growing, which has a high starting yield, but then is growing that yield year on year as well. So J.O. Hambro Capital Management UK Equity Fund's a good fund. The M&G UK Inflation Linked Corporate Bond Fund is another example of that as well.
Okay, Alex, thanks for that. Some really good suggestions. And you can see more of Emma's suggestions on assets and funds to beat inflation in this week's magazine and the website. If you're an income investor, you probably take the view that in the current yield-starved environment, you need to look anywhere and everywhere to get a decent yield, with no restraints on what you invest in. But one fund, which invests according to very strict criteria, is beating most of its sector peers in terms of its total returns, and also offers one of the best yields. Kate, you interviewed the manager of this fund. Which is it?
So this is Bryn Jones, who's the manager of Rathbone Ethical Bond Fund. And so it's a fund which is a sterling corporate bond fund that invests along ethical criteria. So he invests in bonds which kind of work with a range of themes, which could be kind of political or macroeconomic themes. And then he screens the bonds that he likes along ethical criteria. And that's both negative screening and positive screening, meaning that some bonds are kind of initially kicked out if they're involved with industries like gambling, for example. And then everyone that they want to put in the portfolio has to have at least one positive kind of social, environmental, whatever, ethical credential to be included.
Okay. I mean, that sounds very worthy, but it's really picky. So how is Rathbone Ethical Bond managing to beat its peers with such tight restrictions on what it can invest in?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, I mean, generally people do associate ethical bond or ethical investing. I think people have a perception that it's not, you know, a good way to get great returns. But in fact, this is the top performing fund in the Investment Association Sterling Corporate Bond Sector over 1 year. I think, well, Bryn would say that for a start, there's a, you know, they're really, they have got a big universe to fish in, and they're looking for great bonds for a start. But he would say that actually some of the best bonds in terms of environmental and social sustainability are also some of the most kind of exciting economic or investment themes of the future. So if you think about things like driverless cars or clean energy, these are things which other global fund managers, for example, might be investing in too. And also, if you think about those companies that engage in the most negative practices or have really kind of hit headlines for all the wrong reasons, those have not been great investments either, certainly over certain timeframes. I mean, he gave an example of something like the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Obviously, that share price was really punished following that. And that's an example of a company, you know, not doing the most ethical things, environmentally speaking.
And not making good returns for its investors either at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. OK, so what does Bryn Jones and his team like then?
Well, at the moment, one big area the team is looking at is cybersecurity. Obviously, cyber risk is a massive story at the moment. We've had, you know, several big headlines about it in the past couple of years. He's investing in the bonds of insurance companies which work in this area. So things like Beazley and Chubb. Those are good because they're quite high yielding bonds. And also there aren't that many players in that industry. So it's kind of good in terms of supply and demand dynamics. Also keen on things like green energy. And he likes banks as well because they're looking better kind of capitalised and they're on quite high yields.
OK. Alex, do you think you can really make good returns when investing with strict ethical criteria? I suppose what I'm saying is this fund the exception or the norm?
Well, we know Bryn quite well, actually, at Brown Shipley. He's a fund that we invest with as well. So I don't think he's obviously done very well this year relative to his peers, but there's a number of other examples out there, so he's not the only fund that can do well. If you take an equity fund, for example, and you think very simplistically about an ethical criteria and what you may buy and what you may not buy, some of the areas that you probably avoid are more mining and oil and gas. And when you think of the problems that you had a few years ago when the oil price fell from $150 down to 30 or so, they were good places to avoid. So those funds tended to do well in that environment. Other funds as well over time have shown that ethical criteria can benefit. So if you're very, very strict and you say you avoided banks and financials, that may have been a very good way to deliver returns in a financial crisis as well, if you'd avoided those areas. So there's definitely some good products out there that can help and deliver superior returns.
Okay, do you think having an ethical screen is a good way to weed out unsavoury companies? Because at the end of the day, even if you're not an ethical investor, presumably you want to put your money into companies with good governance.
Yeah, it's been a very much a growing area, and a lot of the fund managers that we meet on an ongoing basis are saying they're adding ESG screening, so environmental, social and governance to their process now. So I think it's a good way of finding good businesses and sustainable businesses as well.
Okay, so you mentioned, you know, Brin, but there's other products as well. So are there any ethical funds that you like or use with your clients?
So we use a variety of active and passive type vehicles for our clients in this environment. And we're trying to build diversified portfolios, so in different regions and different asset classes as well. So there's the Royal London Sustainable Leaders, which is a good fund, which is in the UK equity income, UK all company sector, sorry. So that's one example. And more recently, some of the passive funds that we've been buying at UBS have got quite a good range, as have iShares, of passive ESG type products.
Which I believe Kate has written about in the magazine, so check our website to read more on those. Now, Kate, ethical criteria aside, Rathbone Ethical Bond is a corporate bond fund, but aren't there some concerns on this area of the market?
Well, yeah, I mean, generally the big things affecting bonds at the moment, or in general terms, are interest rate rises, inflation, and also issues around liquidity. The corporate bond market, we do hear a lot of concerns about it being very expensive. And there's also a worry about liquidity. The Bank of England itself recently talked about this, about being very concerned about what happens if everybody wants to sell at the same time and kind of rush for the exits. And in fact, in the widest terms as well, there is also this big worry about what happens around the end of QE and as interest rates rise. Until now, it's been very cheap to borrow money across the board because rates have been very low. That means for even the most high-risk borrowers, life has been pretty easy and they've been able to borrow very cheaply, take on quite a lot of debt. The big worry is if we do get a rate rise and we have this tapering of easy money that's gone alongside it, people will find it harder to service that debt and it could trip things up. What Brin says is that he can obviously withstand this kind of volatility and actually benefit from higher yields. The big worry will be is if we've had a load of investors who have moved out of the corporate bond space, which has been kind of bid up by Bank of England bond buying. We've had investors move out of that into higher yield products, which could then suffer from things like defaults. So it's a complex picture, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on here. He basically says he could benefit from this volatility as a bond fund manager and benefit from potentially higher yields.
Okay. Now, Alex, are you concerned about the effects quantitative easing has been having and what the fallout will be when it's withdrawn?
Well, quantitative easing has pushed bond yields down to all-time low levels, so there is rightly concern that when this easing stops, that the yields are going to start to move back higher. I don't share that view. I think bonds are just going to trade sideways here, and you've lost some of the momentum that you've had over the years to keep bonds moving lower. It's very topical at the moment. The ECB were even talking about it yesterday.
Tapering, yes.
Exactly. The US are talking about actually reducing the size of their balance sheet as well. And clearly we've got an interest rate hike potentially next week in the UK. So it is very topical at the moment. I suppose the underlying reason why people are doing this, though, and central banks are doing this, is because it's a sign that growth around the world is very strong at the moment. So despite the concerns that that QE is going to be reversed and stopped, is equally growth is strong, which is good for businesses as well.
Okay, so what position does this put corporate bonds and the funds that invest in them into?
So it does potentially mean that if some investors are nervous, which they will be with interest rates rising, that you might want to be in shorter dated bonds that we talked about before. But there are bond funds out there that can mitigate these risks and can be investing in different asset classes and globally as well, which can perform well in this environment. And some managers like Brin do like periods of volatility because it gives them opportunity to add new positions as well.
Okay, so on that note, are there any types of bonds and bond funds that you like?
Strategic bond funds, because they tend to be shorter maturity bonds as well. They tend to be more global. They can, as I mentioned, they can invest in different asset classes. So if they like high yield because they think it's offering value, they can invest there. Equally, if they're nervous, they can increase their government bond exposure. So there's a number of good strategic bond funds out there which can offer some protection and deliver good returns in this environment.
Okay, so which ones do you particularly like?
We've got a few on our investment list at Brown Shipley. So we've got Aviva, Henderson, Jupiter. They're all very good funds.
Okay, thank you, Alex. Some really good suggestions again. Now, as well as bond market concerns, many investors are not comfortable with the heady levels that certain equity markets are hitting, with those in the US being notable examples. But Kate, you recently met an investor who argues the opposite. Who is this, and why doesn't he think markets are expensive or too expensive?
So this is Charles Plowden, senior partner at Baillie Gifford and manager of Monk's Investment Trust. So he's arguing that actually if you look at the long-term trend of the S&P and map it on a logarithmic scale, so if you look at it a little bit differently, it's actually close to its long-term average and is not overvalued. He says the long-term trend is that the S&P rises by about 7% per year, annualised, and it's done that for 90 years, apparently. So he's saying, you know, this is all a bit overcooked, these years.
Okay, so as he has this view, and he's not obviously jittery like some investors, what approach is he taking and what sort of things is he investing in?
Well, Baillie Gifford as a house has quite a growth-focused kind of, I guess, bullish view on the economy. What they look for is asymmetric returns from their stocks. So that means that they want to buy things that go up by a lot, and they don't mind owning some things that fail as a result. So it's quite a kind of bullish attitude to stocks, and it means that they invest in very high growth things like the tech giants that we hear talked about a lot, you know, Amazon, Facebook, and all of those kind of things that we might think are standing on very high valuations. You know, they argue that some of these stocks have the potential to really grow exponentially, and that's what they're looking for. So he also wants to gear the trust more in order to really increase that exposure to markets and take on bigger positions. It's basically, you know, the opposite to a very...
When you say gearing, you mean he's taking on debt, put it in layman's terms.
Exactly, yeah. He's taking on debt. Historically, Monks had a period of underperformance before Charles took over as manager in March 2015. And he puts down some of that underperformance to a lack of debt, to being too cautious. And so what he's trying to do is bring that level up so the trust is essentially more exposed to the market positions it takes.
Okay. Now, Alex, are you concerned at the levels equity markets have reached, and do you think a crash is imminent?
I'm not concerned at the moment because global growth is strong, and I don't think valuations globally are too stretched. I think, you know, markets are at all-time highs, but over time you do expect companies to grow earnings and to become more expensive because of that as well. I don't think there's a crash imminent, but sometimes you never know when these things are going to happen, because there might be an event risk, there might be something that happens that could cause a shock to markets. That's not our central case at the moment, but you know, it definitely could happen.
Okay, so presumably are you avoiding anywhere or not avoiding anywhere? Or
no, we're not avoiding anywhere at the moment. So we are invested across most global stock markets. I suppose the US is an area where we've become slightly more cautious because it is more elevated on PE levels, so price to earnings levels compared to other global stock markets. But there's other areas that we like as well. So there's emerging markets, which we believe are quite well positioned and look quite cheap relative to other global markets as well.
Okay, thank you, Alex. Some useful pointers. And you can read Kate's full interview with Charles Plowden in this week's magazine and the website. That brings us to the end of today's show, but you can read more about ways to beat inflation, why Rathbone Ethical Bond Fund is outperforming, and how Monk's Investment Trust is positioned in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening, and have a good weekend.